Chapter 43. The President had a light breakfast after reaching Camp David. The weather was unseasonably warm, there was Indian summer in the air, and he was dressed in cotton slacks and short-sleeved sweater. He sat in a large wing chair with several file folders in his lap and studied the personal histories of the Inner Corps. After reading the last file, he closed his eyes, pondering his options, wondering what he would say to the men who were waiting in the camp's main dining room. Hagen entered the study and stood quietly until the President opened his eyes. "Ready when you are, Vince." The President slowly pushed himself from the chair. "Might as well get on with it, then." They were waiting around the long dining table as the President had arranged. No guards were present, none were required. These were honorable men who had no intent to commit crime. They respectfully rose to their feet as he entered the room, but he waved them down. Eight were present and accounted for. General Fisher, Booth, Mitchell, and Bush sat on one side of the table, opposite Erickson, Senator Porter, and Dan Fawcett. Hudson was seated by himself at the far end. Only Raymond LeBaron was missing. They were dressed casually, sitting comfortably like golfers in a clubhouse, relaxed, supremely confident and showing no signs of tension.
"Good morning, Mr. President," greeted Senator Porter cheerfully. "To what do we owe the honor of this mysterious summons?"
The President cleared his throat.
"You all know why I've brought you here, so we don't have to play games."
"You don't want to congratulate us?" asked Clyde Booth sarcastically.
"Tributes may or may not be offered," said the President coldly. "That will depend."
"Depend on what?" Gunnar Erickson demanded rudely.
"I believe what the President is fishing for," said Hudson, "is our blessing for allowing the Russians to claim a share of the moon."
"That, and a confession of mass murder."
The tables were turned. They just sat there, eyes with the look of fish in a freezer, staring at the President. Senator Porter, a fast thinker, launched his attack first.
"Execution gangland style or arsenic and old lace poison in the tea? If I may ask, Mr. President, what in hell are you talking about?"
"A small matter of 9 dead Soviet cosmonauts."
"Those lost during the early Soyuz missions?" asked Dan Fawcett.
"No," answered the President.
"The 9 Russians who were killed on the Salinas lunar probes."
Hudson gripped the edge of the table and stared as if he had been electrocuted.
"The Salinas spacecraft were unmanned."
"The Russians wanted the world to think so. But in reality, they each carried 3 men. We have one of the crews on ice in the Walter Reed Hospital morgue, if you care to examine the remains."
No one would have thought it to look at them. They considered themselves moral-minded citizens doing a job for their country. The last thing any of them expected to see in a mirror was the reflection of a cold-blooded killer. To say that the President had his audience in the palm of his hand would be an understatement. Hagen sat fascinated. This was all news to him.
"If you will bear with me," the President continued, "I'll indulge in mixing facts with speculation. To begin with, you and your moon colonists have accomplished an incredible achievement. I compliment you on your perseverance and genius, as will the world in the coming weeks. However, you have unwittingly made a terrible error that could easily stain your accomplishment. In your zeal to wave the stars and stripes, you have ignored the International Space Law Treaty governing activities on the moon, which was ratified by the United States, the Soviet Union, and 3 other countries in 1984. Then you took it upon yourselves to claim the moon as a sovereign possession, and, figuratively speaking, posted "trespassers will be shot" signs. Only you backed it up by somehow destroying 3 Soviet lunar probes. One of them, Salinas 4, managed to return to Earth, where it orbited for 18 months before control was reestablished. Soviet space engineers attempted to bring it down in the steppes of Kazakhstan, but the craft was damaged and it fell near Cuba instead. Under the guise of a treasure hunt, you sent Raymond LeBaron to find it before the Russians. Telltale marks of damage inflicted by your colonists had to be obliterated. But the Cubans beat you both to the downed craft and retrieved it.
You weren't aware of that until now, and the Russians still don't know. Unless...
The President hung on the word.
Unless Raymond LeBaron has spilled his knowledge of the Jersey colony under torture. I have it on good authority he was captured by the Cubans and turned over to Soviet military intelligence, the GRU.
Raymond won't talk, Hudson said wrathfully.
He may not have to, the President replied. A few hours ago, intelligence analysts, whom I asked to re-examine Soviet space signals received during Salinas IV's re-entry orbits, have discovered that its data on the lunar surface were transmitted to a ground tracking station on the island of Socotra, near Yemen.
Do you comprehend the consequences, gentlemen?
We comprehend what you're driving at.
It was General Fisher who spoke, his voice reflective. The Soviets may have visual proof of the Jersey colony.
Yes.
And they've probably put two and two together and figured your people up there had something to do with the Salinas disasters. You can be sure they will retaliate. No calls on the hotline, no messages slipped through diplomatic channels, no announcements in TASS or Pravda. The battle for the moon will be kept secret by both sides. When you total the score, gentlemen, the result is you have launched a war that may prove impossible to stop. The men seated around the table were shocked and confused, dazed and angry. But they were angry only because of a miscalculation of an event that was beyond their knowledge. The awful truth took several moments to register.
You speak of Soviet retaliation, Mr. President, said Fawcett. Do you have any insight on the possibility?
Put yourself in Soviet shoes. They were on to you a good week before their Salinas 8 lunar station was launched. If I were President Antonov, I'd have ordered the mission converted from scientific exploration to a military operation. There is little doubt in my mind that when Salinas 8 touches down on the moon 20 hours from now, a special team of Soviet commandos will encircle and attack the Jersey colony. Now you tell me, can the base defend itself?
General Fisher looked at Hudson, then turned to the President and shrugged his shoulders.
I can't say. We've never made contingency plans for an armed assault on the colony. As I recall, their only weapons are two handguns and a missile launcher.
Incidentally, when were your colonists scheduled to leave the moon?
They should lift off in about 36 hours, answered Hudson.
I'm curious, said the President. How do they intend to return through Earth's atmosphere? Certainly their lunar transport vehicle doesn't have the capability.
Hudson smiled.
They'll return to the Kennedy spaceport at Cape Canaveral on the shuttle.
The President sighed.
The Gettysburg. Stupid of me not to think of it.
She's already docked at our space station.
Her crew hasn't been advised yet, said Steve Bush of NASA. But once they get over the shock of seeing the colonists suddenly show up on the transport vehicle, they'll be more than willing to take on extra passengers.
The President paused and stared at the members of the inner core, his expression suddenly bleak.
The burning question we all have to face, gentlemen, is whether the Jersey colonists will survive to make the trip.